I'm Al Staheli, and you're listening to Life Minute TV.
Lawyer by day, musician by night, Al Staheli is the only person on the planet who has both played Carnegie Hall and provided legal services for Stevie Ray Vaughan. The Austin-born singer-songwriter got his start in L.A. when he and his brother John were asked to join the critically acclaimed band Spirit. After that, he and his brother went on to form their own band, the Staheli Brothers, before Staheli returned to Texas and dusted off his law degree in 1980. Back in Texas, he still continued music, performing with the likes of Roy Orbison, Jefferson Starship, Emmy Lou Harris, and two European tours with John Cipollina and Nick Gravanitis of Quicksilver Messenger Service and Electric Flag, respectively. He even did a show with Rodney Dangerfield. And just as he was beginning to build his law practice, the record companies came calling, and in 1982, he released his first solo record, Staheli's Comet, and the rest is history. Staheli's latest, Somewhere in West Texas, is an Americana album where his Texas roots really shine. He stopped by the Life Minute studios to tell us all about it and perform a few songs from the new record. This is a Life Minute with Al Staheli.
The new album, Somewhere in West Texas. This all came about sort of by accident. I kind of refer to it as my accidental album because even though I live most of the time in Houston, we have a place out by Big Bend National Park in a little town called Marathon, which is about 45 minutes from Marfa, which everybody seems to know about these days. And so we're out there for a month, kind of during the pandemic era. And I was thinking, you know, I have all these songs that keep saying I'm going to record, and I haven't done them. And I've heard there's one studio in Marfa, and I know two really good musicians there. Fran Christina, the drummer from the Fabulous Thunderbirds, who lives there with his wife, Julie Speed. She's a real successful painter. And then the guitar player named Scrappy Judd Newcomb. He played with Ian McLaughlin's Bump Band. He's played with... and produced Slade Cleaves, who you may know of, who works up in this area a lot. Anyway, he's been around Austin a long time. And so I called him up and just said, hey, I want to get some songs down. And I've heard there's a studio there. I said, yeah, we'll hook you up. And right after we're doing a session in a couple of days, Chris Marish is coming in from Austin to play bass. I know Chris and how great he is. He used to play with Eric Johnson and has played with Michael McDonald. He's played with all kinds of people. I said, well, look, ask Chris if he wants to play bass, because even though I'm sort of known as a singing bass player from Spirit, I don't want to play bass because I wrote these songs on acoustic guitar. And so Chris came to town. We had one rehearsal at Fran's. Just ran through some songs, went in the studio next day, recorded six basic tracks in one day. It was really the musicians who talked me into doing an album. They said, look, you've got some really good songs here. Come back with five or six more and you'll have an album. I said, okay, so I went back 6 or 8 weeks later, five or six more songs, and we did some more. And then, of course, there were some overdubs after that. But it was pretty, if you've listened to any of it, you know, it's pretty direct, certainly not overproduced, but Scrappy was so involved in it that I made him producer. He's the credited producer, and he'll be with me tonight at the Rockwood. And anyway, you know, if we would have said we're going in to do an album, probably wouldn't have turned out as much fun and as it does, you know, because then it would have been serious, you know. But that's the story of my accidental album. You know, songs have come about in every way imaginable. Driving down the highway, well, like that second song on the album, What's Wrong With You For Loving Me? That was, this was some time ago. This was like, I don't know, 20 years ago. But I'd never recorded the song. And I was with my girlfriend at the time, and I thought I was in love with her, and I told her so. And she turned to me and said, what's wrong with you? People smiling, but I wasn't sure what. Any rate, suffice it to say, that didn't work out long term, but I thought, wow, what a good song title. What's Wrong With You For Loving Me? And so that's where that one came from. Sometimes it's a riff, sometimes it's a chord change, sometimes it's the title. They come about in all sorts of ways. And the songs on this album were not all written within a short period of time. Some of them, like that one and Something Good Is Gonna Happen, the first song on the record, I wrote probably 1978 or 9. It's just been sitting around because I wasn't doing that kind of music at that time. And I just thought it was a nice little song, but I brought it out and everybody loved it and they're still loving it. It seems to be getting some of the most radio play and most love. So we did a video of that song, the first video. We did it out in Marathon in the desert. Really, it was on a ranch. We had a buddy, a friend out there that his family has a big ranch, and I said, we need a road that looks like we're stranded out in the middle of the desert and we've broken down. And he said, okay, well, we got a pasture, you can do that, but there's buffalo on it. He said, but I think we can keep them away from you. So we got free buffalo for that video. And it was a lot of fun. The first day, the buffalo were kind of curious and they were getting real close. And so he had to shoo them away. But so we did that video out there. And then we did a second video out in Marathon called Mercy of the Moon. Actually, I'm going to later, I guess, do both those songs for you. That was more like a little film short, the way. And the director, I've got to mention, Charlie Schwann, is a young man who's 28. I've known him since he was born because his grandfather was my drummer when I was in college at the University of Texas years ago. He graduated from University of Texas Film School. He grew up with Robert Rodriguez's kids, and his father was, and still is, I think, a stunt coordinator on films shot in Texas and all that. So he kind of grew up in the film world, and he did a film short. He had to do a film short to graduate and write it, and he called me back then 4 or 5 years ago and said, I've written this script, and it takes place in the 70s. I know you did a lot of music back then. Maybe you've got something I can use. And I said, sure, I'll let you into my Dropbox. You just roam around, anything you find, you can use. And so he ended up using everything in the film. Of course, it's just a 15, 20 minute film. It was stuff he found in the Dropbox. My songs and one of my son's songs, which is probably the best one. And that film got accepted in the Tribeca Film Festival, and it won an award out in Crested Butte Film Festival. And so he did, he's now out in LA, and in fact, he's doing videos, but he's doing editing for Google and different things. And it's just extra gratifying that the grandson of my buddy from Texas, at the University of Texas, is involved in this second coming of Al Staheli that's going on right about now. Well, when I first got into it was right before the eighth grade, and I was looking forward to going out for football. I grew up in Austin. It was very different back then than it is now. It was cool back then. Some people think it was cooler back then. It's gotten somewhat of a victim of its success. But I grew up in Austin and played baseball, played golf as a kid, caddied, and I was out in the sun and apparently got a dehydrated kidney, and doctor said, you can't go out for football. And I was kind of, can't do any strenuous sports till next summer. And I said, okay. So my cousin had an acoustic guitar, and he came over and he taught me a Ricky Nelson song called Poor Little Fool. And I took some guitar lessons. And then going forward, in high school I had a band. In college, undergraduate school I had a band. And that drummer that I talked about, Mike Hinton, I was in a band with two law students. I was undergraduate. I was supposed to go to med school. It was time for me to graduate, and they said, no, you can't go to med school yet because you'll have to leave Austin. And we got one more year of law school, and we were making good money playing on weekends, and they already were married and had a kid. And they said, go to law school with us just 1 year, and then you can do whatever you want, but just until we graduate. And Vietnam was going on, so I couldn't, if I didn't stay in school, I'd get drafted. So I started law school to keep a rock band together. After the first year, I realized I'd been tricked, because if you finish the first year of law school, you might as well finish, because that's a killer year. So that's how I got in music. And then after law school, I took the bar, passed the bar, but promised myself I'd do music full time and give it a try. So I went to LA, got lucky at first and joined that band Spirit. When two guys left, I joined as lead singer and bass player and wrote seven of the songs on an album called Feedback that came out in 72. And we headlined Carnegie Hall right down the street from here. It's been a long and winding road. You can't not say that Carnegie Hall was an experience. It was a kind of an extra experience, because the summer between my second and third year of law school, I came up to New York for the summer and I worked at ASCAP. And they bought two tickets to every Schaefer concert in the park that Ron Delsener was the producer of, so that I could go out and sort of be the shake hands with the ASCAP members and kind of promote ASCAP. So I got to know Ron Delsener from doing that a little bit. Well, then, of course, I left New York. About 3 years later, I was in Spirit, and we were headlining Carnegie Hall, and the dressing room at Carnegie Hall is upstairs. I was coming down the stairs, had my bass on, heading toward the stage. I meet Ron Delsener coming up the stairs, and he does a double take and says, "What are you doing here?" I said, "I'm working for you tonight." He said, "I didn't know you were in this band." So that's kind of a cool memory, the whole Carnegie Hall thing. We did a tour of Australia. That was including several dates in Tasmania, which was interesting. And then when the band broke up, my brother and I did an album as the Staheli Brothers for Epic Records. Not much happened with it. And then he got a chance to go with JoJo Gunn when their guitar player left. And so then I decided to try to make my way as a solo artist. And in the meantime, had some people record some of my songs, including Keith Moon, the drummer from The Who. I was at a JoJo Gunn recording session, and the engineer, a guy named John Stronach, happened to mention that he was getting ready to start a Keith Moon album. And I said, "Really?" I said, "Who's producing?" He said, "Mal Evans." I said, "Mal Evans, the Beatles roadie? The guy that I saw in all the movies, the big guy with horn-rimmed glasses?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Do they have all the songs?" And he said, "I don't think so." I said, "Well, I might have something." He said, "Well, come to the record plant on Wednesday, and I'll introduce you to Mal." So I go down, and I play him one song, kind of shrugged. "I don't think so." I played him a song called Crazy Like a Fox. He said, "Yeah, I could hear Keith doing that. We'll cut it on Friday." This was Wednesday? That's Friday. I thought, all right, this is the way song plugging should be. And I said, "Well, do you have the musicians lined up?" And he said, "No." And I said, "Well, of course, I know the song." But I said, "Also, my brother who plays guitar for JoJo Gunn, he knows the song." He said, "Oh, well, why don't we get all of JoJo Gunn to play?" So I called the guys. "Want to play on a Keith Moon session Friday?" "Yes, we do." So we get down there, and in addition to me, JoJo Gunn, and Keith Moon, so happened that they also called Jesse Ed Davis to play guitar. And sitting next to me, I was playing acoustic six string with Spencer Davis, an acoustic 12 string. That's the way they wanted to cut the track. Everybody playing at once. It wasn't a bunch of overdubs. And the solo on that album was played by my brother. And so then I got out there with Keith, and because he just heard the song the day before and had the lyrics written out, and kind of cueing him where to come in. And he's got headphones on and bottle of Cavassier in his left hand, kind of reeling around. And I'm pointing to him where to come in, and he's in that Keith Moon way, not really singing so much as acting, you know. Like, stand back, she's crazy like a fox, and that fox got her eyes on you. But that's what you wanted Keith Moon to do, right? So I've seen so many changes. Like, I can remember when it was a big deal when the Sony Walkman came in, you know. I can remember when CDs came in, and that was in digital at that time. Recording studios weren't even sure they liked digital. In fact, interestingly enough, a guy from Houston who had a studio had the first two Sony 24-track digital machines, and guys like Stevie Wonder and Neil Young and Frank Zappa were renting his machines to transfer their analog tapes. And it took a while for the U.S. to embrace digital, but the first time I ever even saw a CD was in Germany, up at Deutsche Grammophon, and they weren't even out yet. And because I had a solo album later, released in '82, released on Polydor in Europe, and this guy came up and said, "See this? This is going to be the next big thing." And okay, and sure enough, it was a year later, and that caused some changes. Now the Napster, you think about all of that. I think the record companies made a mistake by shutting them down. Yes, they were copyright infringing, but everyone was getting turning each other on to music. All the kids, I had a son that time, and I was seeing what they were doing. You know, he and his friends were turning each other on to music, and if they really liked the band, they'd go out and buy the CD. And so when you think about it, they were doing just what, let me say, Napster was doing, just what record companies were paying big money to promotion people to do, to get stuff on radio so people would hear it and turn their friends onto it. Why would you want to shut that down? You should have just cut a deal with them, monetized it, because as soon as they shut it down, everybody just went to, you know, these other pirate ways of doing it anyway, you know. So then, but the thing to always know is that copyright law and the business, copyright law is always going to tag behind whatever the new platforms are, whatever the new, whether it's CDs back then or streaming or whatever. And so that's what's going on now, is there's been some, you know, there's a new copyright law, updated copyright law, upping the royalty rates, but there's still negotiations going on about all that. And it's always going to be playing catch up, because there will be other new things, and just like what's going on with the actors' strike. And I've noticed, well, this is actors' equity. This is a different thing, this building. Well, you know, the clients always appreciate, I mean, I take my past for granted, but they appreciate the fact that I know what they're doing and what they're talking about when they're talking about being on the road or being in the studio or writing a song. So I think clients appreciate it, because you can go to law school and, or you can study contracts and all that. But if you have, you know, it's like any business, you might have studied the business of an industry, or like in your business, the TV industry, but you kind of have to get involved. And you probably started as a, I don't know, maybe an intern when you got out of college or whatever, and you have to get your feet wet and know it, not just from a book way, but from the inside out. And so I think it's been a help. It's certainly been a help. And my first client of note was Stevie Ray Vaughan when he got his deal. And so that was, I negotiated his deal. And I'd known his brother Jimmy since he was 15, when he was in his first band. They used to play down in Austin, same time I was playing. Doyle Bramhall Sr. was his, the drummer and singer. And now, of course, there's the other this Doyle Bramhall, the son, has made quite a name for himself. And so, it's, like I say, I've got a lot of stories we could tell, but we got only so much time, so feel free to focus me. I want to get out and play more to promote this album. I'm really enjoying taking this music to the people, seeing the great response. It's been very satisfying to see it be embraced by people who've never heard it, and many people didn't know who I was, and I'm just having fun doing it and want to keep doing it. Maybe I can be like Tony Bennett. Maybe I can be doing it for another 20 years or something. I work two ways. I'm comfortable working acoustically. I did several acoustic solo shows on this little jaunt on the East Coast. And then just 2 days ago, I did a show with a band in Rhode Island. It a great response. I come from a rock background, so even though this is more of an Americana style album, there's plenty of rocking going on too. So when I first started out, it was Chuck Berry, it was Buddy Holly, it was even some blues stuff like Jimmy Reed. But I've always liked a variety of music, and as long as it's good. In fact, I love Brazilian music, and I always did. In fact, having said that, Evelyn Rubio, who has worked with me, she's from Mexico, and she's worked with me for a number of years, not on this jaunt out here, but she just recorded a song of mine that called Because I Want To, that just a video just came out last week. If you have a moment, check that out, because I've got a version on Spotify of my version of that, and this is her version, and it's sort of a Brazilian feel. In fact, I have three songs on that were inspired by my trips to Brazil that I refer to as my Bossa Gringo trilogy. And so if you go to Spotify, you can hear those. But, oh, best life advice? Here's what I tell musicians. Like if I have someone, a young singer, songwriter, musician, come to me and they say, well, you know, I've done this CD or I'm doing this, and but I'm also not sure if I should continue in this or maybe go in another direction that's not music related. Or I'll say, look, if you can do something else besides the music or acting or whatever it is you're interested in, and know that you're not ever going to regret it, then go do that other thing, because this is hard. You know, you got to love it, and if you got to feel you have no choice. I felt I had no choice. When I got to law school, I knew if I didn't go try it full time, I'd always wonder what if I would have started some real bad band when I was 45 years old and embarrassed myself. So I got to go for it, you know. And if it doesn't work out, then I'll do something else. So I never had a midlife crisis. And so that's what I tell people to do. Well, I got two granddaughters and a wonderful son. That's why I took about 20 years off from performing when I became a father and concentrated on the law. And then once he went off to college, he went to Princeton. I'll go ahead and brag a little bit, and played baseball and then got drafted by the Mariners. And he's also a great musician and songwriter, but right now he's a full-time dad and gave me a couple of granddaughters. They take up a little time. And like going out to West Texas, our place is out there, that Big Bend area. And if you or your friends and fans have never been out that way, you really should. You don't really get it until you go out there. In fact, I'm from Texas. I'd never been out there till 15 years ago, until when I met Wilma, who was managing a hotel out there called The Gage, which is a destination hotel. And I used to think, okay, West Texas, you go to a desert. So what's the big deal? You get out there, you get it. It's a high desert. It's mountains and it's a great place. Okay, this is the first song on the album, Somewhere in West Texas. It's called Something Good Is Gonna Happen.
Mm-hmm. Something good is gonna happen. I can feel it in the air. Something good is gonna happen. When it does, I'm gonna be there. 'Cause I can feel my luck changing, even though it ain't changed yet. My heart is like that wheel of fortune. Step right up, I'll take all bets. Well, I bet I'll find a girl who loves me. And we can't stand to be apart. We're gonna fly away together. Wing to wing and heart to heart. Something good is gonna happen. I can feel it in the air. Something good is gonna happen. And when it does, I'm gonna be there. Well, I bet I'll find a girl who loves me. And we can't stand to be apart. We're gonna fly away together. Wing to wing and heart to heart. 'Cause something good is gonna happen. I can feel it in the air. I can feel it in the air. Oh, thank you, ladies. Okay. I'm at the mercy of the moon. She can take me where she will, run me ragged, stand me still, turn me cold and make me swoon. I'm at the mercy of the moon. And tonight I see the light pouring down all over you. And as the dew begins to fall and your lips begin to call, I'm in too deep now to refuse. You say you love me and I know. That tonight you really do. But tomorrow comes too soon, and you'll sing another tune, and you'll find somebody new. But tonight we're at the mercy of the moon. She can take us where she will, run us ragged, stand us still, turn us cold and make us swoon. We're at the mercy of the moon. This shows your body close to mine. I would give up this fight for fame. And forget that your last name. Is his instead of mine. I'm at the mercy of the moon. You're at the mercy of the moon. We're at the mercy.
To see more of this interview, visit our website, lifeminute.tv. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, Life Minute TV.